Hey Trailblazers, this is Jason, your host of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. Before we jump into our latest episode, I've got some incredible news for you. Are you gearing up for your next big hike or backpacking trip? Well, we at Trailblazing Texas podcast have partnered up with Trekker Joe's, the ultimate Texas outfitter, to bring you something I feel absolutely special. Listeners, you of the Trailblazing Texas podcast can now get a one-time 15% off their gear purchases at Trekker Joe's. That's right. Whether you're a first-time customer at Trekker Joe's or a repeat customer like me, you can save big and hit the trails well-prepared. So upon checkout, use code TTP15 to claim your 15% discount and in the process support an amazing local Texas business. So happy trails, and don't forget to tell your hiking buddies. Now on with the episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast, where we embark on a journey through our diverse Texas landscapes and breathtaking trails while always engaging with our amazing Texas hiking community. So settle in, tighten up those bootlaces, and get ready for the thrilling tales awaiting for you on this episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast. I'm your host, Jason, and I am refreshed. Had about, 3 weeks of vacation. Not a lot of hiking, not any podcasting, just kind of kicking back and enjoying the nice weather we've been having. Today, we are ending the series that I started. It's been probably 3 or 4 months ago where we were kind of highlighting some of the places that us Texas hikers like to go. And the last destination is, of course, one of my favorites, New Mexico. And if you're a follower of any of my content or a follower of the podcast, you know who the next guest is. They're back for round two. It is the one and only, one of my few people that I truly love on this planet, Sam, all the way from, where are you at now?
It's called Las Cruces.
Las Cruces.
Las Cruces, yeah.
I don't feel comfortable saying that, but welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks. Yeah, happy to be here.
So how have you been?
Great.
Anything, nothing exciting?
I started a new job here in Las Cruces. I just moved here from up north. I was living in a little village outside of Santa Fe, basically. And my company moved me down here. So that's exciting. New job, new life, new apartment.
So how are you adapting to that? Pretty good?
Yeah. I like it. The living situation is much better, and Las Cruces is beautiful, and it's cool seeing the southern part of the state more, because normally, this is like 6 hours. New Mexico is a big state, so this is about 6 hours from where I grew up, so it's a kind of a whole nother world down here that I'm getting to explore, and finally, you know how it is, I guess, like, you live in a state for a long time, but you don't get to see a lot of it because you live in a completely different part of it, I guess.
Yeah, and also, like, just life gets in the way and you just get busy. And well, I always love my time with some Sam, and I greatly appreciate you coming on the podcast. And I know we kind of talked off and on. Well, we talk at least a couple times every couple of weeks, but I was heading to go rock climb. And it just kind of dawned on me that sometimes when I go to these spectacular locations, like, I love New Mexico. Every time I leave from skiing or hiking, I just feel sick. Like, I feel like I belong here. So it just kind of dawned on me, I think it was after a trip to Colorado, that oftentimes I see more Texas license plates than I do, local license plates. And I know for me, going somewhere like Washington State or Colorado I've not yet been to Arizona, but I would imagine it would be the same. I just sometimes get overwhelmed, and I'm sure that it's a lot of people just kind of get overwhelmed. You don't understand, like, especially like Washington State. You know, I had no idea about the how to get into a state park, and you know, there's a website that you have to pay your money. No one's at the booth, and can I get into the park or not? Or in Colorado, if you want to do a 14er, and you get to the trailhead 1 or 2 in the morning, you're probably going to be too late because you're not getting any parking. So there's just like so many things to these areas where we all go hiking. And so, you know, I wanted to have a series where maybe not all the details, but just kind of touch on what it means to hike in these locations. And again, you know, I thank you. I know you're busy, but you know, I would never ever talk New Mexico hiking, backpacking, or climbing without you. So again, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Of course.
So the first question, and it's probably maybe a dumb question because New Mexico is spectacular, but what do you think makes New Mexico a top destination for hikers and backpackers?
I think a lot of things. It's beautiful. I mean, simply, you could just say it's absolutely gorgeous, the landscape. So anywhere, that's kind of what makes hiking fun, is just having a beautiful scenery. There's also a lot of different types of environments here. Like there's desert where I'm at down here. It's just sand and desert. And then you can go up into the mountains or into the Gila, and then it's like a big forest. Doesn't even look like what I imagine people normally think of as New Mexico. Like I imagine a lot of people think Breaking Bad in the desert in Albuquerque, kind of. Yeah. But then, you know, you go up where I'm from in the Jemez, and it's green. Actually, you know, because you love Longmire, but that was shot here in the Jemez Mountains right above where I grew up. And that looks like, I mean, that's supposed to be Wyoming in the show. And no one would guess it's New Mexico. And then we have all kinds of Native American ruins, and there's the White Sands National Park with sand dunes, white sand dunes, and caves. All kinds of cool stuff here.
So would you say that if I look at New Mexico as a state in its whole, would you describe the different types of landscapes to be regional? So like you said, where you're at now is mainly desert, but do you also have access to mountains? Are there different areas of New Mexico that are primarily known for the mountains, or known for the desert, or known for the forest, or is it kind of a mixed bag within your different regions of New Mexico?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say it's a mixed bag. So last weekend, I went to the Gila Wilderness, which is actually, I don't know if you knew this, but it's the oldest wilderness in the United States. Aldo Leopold was a famous naturalist, environmentalist guy, and he helped establish it as the first wilderness. Anyways, it's when I was in there, I was like, this looks like the Jemez. This looks like up north, down here, down south. You know, it's 3 hours away from Las Cruces, but it's still very far south. But it's, you know, 7,000 feet elevation up there. And it's the mountains, and it gets snow in the winter. And so I think it'd be tough to generalize the state and be like, oh, down south, it's all desert. And then up north, it's all mountains, because there's mountains down here as well. And in Albuquerque, there's the Sandia Mountains, and it gets really green and forested up there. But then you go, I would say in New Mexico, a lot of it's just elevation based. And then there's kind of mountains everywhere in a lot of different parts of the state. But in general, I would say the further north you go, the more green and mountainous it gets in general. Now that I say that, I'm second guessing myself, because yeah, you could probably go east or west and get back into the desert. It's like it's mostly elevation based. So there's like the mountains, like the Rocky Mountains, kind of start around Santa Fe and go up from there. But there's also, you know, there's different mountains further south. So I don't know. There's beautiful stuff all over the state. So
yeah. So basically, hikers really need to do their research.
I mean, try and think about what it is you want. If you want to see the mountains, then go, you know, do your research, figure out. I guess, you know, and it depends, like, where are you coming from? Like, are you coming from Texas? Like, how far do you want to drive? You know, what? Because I guess it's a far drive no matter what, coming from Texas. But
yeah, it's like, if I want to get to Angel Fire from my house, it's about a 15-hour drive. And that's, you know, the northern part.
Yeah. And I imagine it's not that much less time. Like, to get to where Guadalupe, it's 12, right?
10. It'll take me 10.
And then I'm like 3 hours from Guadalupe here. So that would be 13 as opposed to 15, you know? So when you're driving that far, I don't know how much of a difference a few hours makes. Where I was just at the Gila, that's 3 hours from me. So, you know, it'd probably be about 15 for you to get there as well. So pretty similar times.
And when I think of New Mexico, I do think, like, I don't think of mountains in your area or south, but absolutely there are. And I, you know, I just because of like Wheeler Peak and some of the things you get into by Red River and Angel Fire, you know, where the skiing is Taos, you know, I think the northern part is more mountainy. But yeah, I mean, it's, do your research, because you're probably going to find what you're looking for in all the regions of New Mexico. Maybe not to the extreme, but you'll definitely be able to find something. And for someone coming from Texas, so we don't usually hike or backpack in a lot of snow. You and I have hiked and backpacked in some snow in West Texas, in the Quads. What if you had to tell someone coming in from Texas, what would be the best seasons, do you think, for hiking and backpacking in New Mexico? And maybe is it also depending on what region that you're going to be hiking in?
Yeah, it does depend somewhat. For sure, on what, because like here in Cruces, it's kind of like more similar to the weather in Guadalupe National Park, where like you don't want to hike around here very much in the summer, just because it's so hot. I mean, I'll still hike, but you know, it's going to be crazy hot. Like, the peak, the best time to hike here probably is in the winter, the spring or fall. But if you're up way far north and you're trying to climb Wheeler or something, you couldn't climb it in the winter, you know? Well, you could, but it would be more extreme, you know? It'd be covered in tons of snow.
What do you think your knowledge should be if you were out, or if you found yourself, like for me, I don't want to ski anymore because I crash really bad. And so when the family and I go skiing up at Angel Fire, they go ski and I go find a trail and hike. And let's say someone wanted to, I don't know, try to do Walters or Wheeler or any of the other mountains, like what do you think your technical ability should be trying to do something like that, as it relates to avalanche detection knowledge, hiking, backpacking in the snow, crampons, ice axe, like mountaineering-y type stuff? You know, are we roping in together? Like,
yeah, I mean, that's even a little outside of my wheelhouse. Like, I normally just snowboard in the winter or like, you know, I'm not much of a winter mountaineering person. I would guess, you know, if you were up north and near Taos, where all the biggest mountains are, and you're trying to summit something like Wheeler in the winter, you would have to you'd want way more knowledge than I even have about about mountaineering and climbing things in the snow, because I mean, there's definitely avalanches out there. Like 2 years ago, I think it was two people died on Taos, in the Taos Mountain Resort, like in the ski resort. They weren't even backcountry skiing. They got caught in an avalanche on the mountain, which is pretty crazy. So, I mean, it gets crazy up there. Those mountains are, I forget, 13,000 some feet. No. And they're no joke. So I wouldn't even attempt to summit in the winter. Although I have friends who probably would. I would guess you probably want a couple Avi classes from like Knowles or something. They offer avalanche classes and then a beacon.
You should have an idea what you're doing.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. But I mean, that's if you're trying to summit some of the biggest mountains in the state in winter. You can still, if you're into hiking, there's like tons of beautiful cross country trails you can go skiing on or like snowshoeing on. And I was going to say, it's like, oh, it's always a little sketchier in the winter, I think, because you're just, if you're going far and you get stuck or you get hurt, then, you know, it's cold enough that you could get hypothermia and die.
Where were you at when you had that solo winter hiking trip?
That was in the mountains, same mountains as Ski Santa Fe. I want to say it's the Pecos Wilderness. And that was in February on my 30th birthday. And it was pretty wild. Have you read the book? It was by the person who did White Fang and To Build a Fire. Have you ever heard this book, To Build a Fire? It's a short story. It's about a guy, a miner in Alaska. It's by, I think it's Jack London is the author's name. But it's about a guy in Alaska, and all the old timers are telling him, like, don't go out. It's way too cold. You're going to die if you try and hike to this other town or whatever. And he goes anyways, and he falls through the river. Basically, he's walking on this river to find his way, and he falls through and ends up getting soaked, and he's freezing to death. It's a good book. It's a short story, but anyways, I was reminded of that because I kept going through this. I was following this creek in February through the snow, and I kept going through the creek and just my socks and everything just getting soaked. And I was like, well, if I break my leg out here, you know, I had a satellite device. I had a spot device with a SOS button. And then I had my sleeping bag inside of a, you know, it's in what's the name of the backpack we have? The
Hyperlite.
Yeah, Hyperlite. So those are mostly waterproof. And then I had the pods, which are also waterproof. So, you know, like even if I fell in and got completely soaked, I would have a dry sleeping bag. So I probably would have been fine either way, but it was pretty miserable, honestly. Like I remember doing it and thinking like, thank God I didn't bring anyone with me on this, because they would never want to talk to me again. Like if I brought like a girlfriend on this, that would have been the it. That would have ended the relationship. I mean, I was potholing, you know, potholing's when you go through the snow and up to your knees or whatever. I was potholing up to my waist almost. And I had these snowshoes. I had these snowshoes and I put them on, and that made it so I potholed down to my knees, you know, instead of my waist. And then, you know, once you go down that far, all the snow piles in on top of the snowshoe. So pulling it out is just miserable. So I tried taking them off again. It ended up taking me, I think it took me like more than an hour to go like 1 mile. And then the sun was setting and it was just snow everywhere. And I was like getting a little nervous. And then finally, like right before the sunset, I found the one dry patch of dirt and set up my tent and was freezing all night. But, you know, it was an adventure. It was cool. Like, it was a cool way to celebrate my 30th birthday, I guess, is to like go hike. It was only about 20 miles, and it only really got bad at the end. like the most of the way the sun was hitting the trail, and then I dropped into this canyon, and then there was a super deep snow. So there's only a few miles of really bad.
So did you let anybody know before you took off your itinerary?
Yeah. Yeah. My dad actually dropped me off at the trailhead.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I was going to get to where I was going the next day. It was like a 20-mile trip. So like, I told him, I was like, I'll text you when I get there. And he knew where I was going, and I had friends expecting me at the next spot. And I had my satellite device, so, you know.
Yeah, I remember you telling me stories about that trip.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. I mean, this was my first solo backpacking trip. I think still, to this day, it's the only one I've done all by myself.
So would you say in the winter in New Mexico, hike south, and in the summer of New Mexico, hike north? Get into some elevation where the temperatures are a lot cooler. Cause I know at times, even where you used to live, like Santa Fe or Albuquerque, I mean, you told me like there were some really hot temperatures, and probably where you're at now, you're in the hundreds at times.
Yeah.
Like during the summer.
Yeah. It's like, this is my first summer here. So it, like right now it's already in the, I think mid to upper 80s, and then like there'll be weeks, I think on end, maybe like a month of like one of triple digits. So I would say that's good advice. Go further north during the summer.
Yeah. Catch some elevation at least.
Yeah. Santa Fe is beautiful in the summer. Just go up there. Yeah.
How do you think New Mexico's climate affects hiking conditions throughout the year? And kind of what I mean is, you know, Washington, it seems to be like right after Thanksgiving, it rains and it doesn't stop until summer. And so you have to be leery about that. Colorado, if you're going to catch some elevation, you better be up and below tree line, you know, usually before noon, they say, because of the thunderstorms. Hiking and backpacking in New Mexico, is there anything that kind of like, you know, Colorado's known for that, Washington's known for that. Is there anything, you know, from a climate perspective that hikers should be wary of?
The same monsoons that hit Colorado around August, September, August, even earlier July, there's a monsoon season here as well. So it's the same thing, like that time of year, you want to try and summit early so you don't get caught in the rain and the thunderstorms. And then, you know, like we're just saying, snow in the winter, super hot temps in the summer.
Yeah. Okay.
Really windy in the spring too. I'd say spring is like one of my least favorite seasons here because it's so windy. And people who have allergies are just miserable this time of year. Like three of my coworkers are just miserable. Can't even breathe, whatever. So there's always something. I think maybe the fall is probably the least likely to give you trouble, you know? And it's also super beautiful here. And it's cooling down enough that it's perfect hiking weather.
So I know, like, when I talk, well, not when I talk, but when I think about hiker safety, and it's absolutely because of where I live, I never think of dangers in Texas hiking in the winter or the fall or the spring. But when I don't hike a ton in the summer, but when I, so I guess my question is, I don't necessarily prepare for winter, fall, spring hiking because I just don't. Like, I don't fear what can happen in the winter in the quads or here locally. Yes, maybe there's some ice. Yes, maybe there's a little bit of snow. Yes, maybe I'm hiking through it. Maybe there could be some high winds, especially in the quads, as, you know, we just had over 100 mile an hour at elevation, probably in the second week of March. It was horrible. So when I think of safety concerns and stuff from a season, it's always in the summer and it's always heat. How do you think hikers should prepare for the heat if they are hiking in New Mexico? You know, your heat, I think, is a lot different than my heat because of the humidity. And I think you guys don't have as much humidity. But so how do you get ready? Because, like, I think you hike and you're not limited. You don't limit yourself by seasons. You just go and slay it. I limit myself probably because I'm 20 years almost older than you. So summertime, I'm very leery. But how do you prepare for the summer month?
I might, if it's really hot out, if it's triple digits, I'm probably not hiking. And if I was to go hiking, you know, just, I'm sure you've talked about this before, but like, just bring a ton of water, you know, that's probably the most important thing. And then I would say, like, know your limitations and kind of like, if you're going to hike in something that hot, like, warm up to it in the sense, like, don't go out and try and do like 10 miles or something. Like, yeah, just go like, oh, let's see how a walk around this short little loop feels. Yeah. And then how much water do I need for that? And then, you know, don't go crazy when it's that hot out.
That is so key. Build up.
Yeah.
Go out. Don't your first time that you go outside, don't make it a 20 mile hike. Like,
yeah,
work up to it. Expose yourself to the heat. Understand how your body is going to react or how you react, how you feel. So many people, it's exactly what you said, the opposite. They just, you know, well, I mean, we hear it like in Big Bend or the Quads, people dying. They're trying to hike in the summer. And, you know, this is just like a random, hey, let's go hike and just go do it. And, you know, the heat kills them. Palo Duro, Texas Panhandle, people die. I don't know if it's every year, but it's pretty regularly that at least there is at least one death in that park due to the heat, and to the point where they close the trails, you know, like in the summer from, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning till 5 p.m. And then they'll open them back up in the evening because it does get a lot cooler. But yeah, I think you nailed that one out of the park on how to prepare. Is don't just walk out and start doing it, you know, build up and understand how you can handle, you know, these temperatures. And like tomorrow I'm leading a hike with the Lone Star Hiking Trail, and this is the first lead hike that I'm doing where, you know, the temperatures will probably be in the high 80s, low 90s, building up, you know, to our summer temperatures. So there's a lot of stuff that I'm having to think about. You know, snakes are out now, and you always run into a snake out on the trail. The temperatures, the heat, making sure everybody has water. So yeah, it's really kicking off the season this year. You know, the summer months is right now, and trying to, you know, make sure that I'm prepared, as well as making sure when we head out that everybody's prepared, you know.
Do you have one of those big, I had something, it was called like an aguatainer, those big blue bricks. Like, you buy them at REI, they're just blue plastic. You put 10, 15 gallons or whatever.
I'll usually take, so I think tomorrow we're expected to have 20 hikers. So, you know, first before we hike, I make everybody tell me how much water they have. And then I usually carry, and it's only a 6 mile hike. So 3 miles in, 3 miles out, there's a few Forest Service roads that we're crossing in case, you know, we have to call for any rescue. And I usually carry 2 liters for me. And then I'll carry 2.5 to 3 liters. I'll carry just for extra water in case someone runs out. So we try to be prepared, and it's not big miles. So hopefully, knock on wood, that everything goes smooth. So what do you think are some of the most, okay, I'm a Texas hiker. I'm coming to New Mexico, and I'm like, Sam, I only got 3 or 4 days there. What are some of your most iconic hikes that I have to do, and what makes them special?
Well, I just went to White Sands National Park. I've been there 3 times. It's close to me down here. And I would say that is definitely on the list. Just because there's nothing else like it. It's we went on a sunset hike there with one of the – it's a national park, so with a national park ranger. And she's like, this is the only White sand dunes like this on the planet Earth. There's no other sand dunes of this scale. Like you said, there are some near Guadalupe and some other ones that were down in Mexico, but the scale of this is kind of unreal, and it's almost like walking on an alien planet or something. So I would highly recommend that. And I would say in general, like if you only have a few days here, like it's going to be tough because the state's so big, you know, but I would just try and hit all the national parks. So I would go to Carlsbad. I'd go to and hike around the cave there, and I'd hit White Sands, and those are both close by. And then I would go to the Gila and see the cliff dwellings there. And that'd be a pretty good 3-day trip or 3 or 4 day trip, I guess.
And so what you think is that if someone's going there to hike, they need to really do the research on the region and really kind of limit, you know, especially if it's 3 or 4 days, limit themselves to kind of that region, and they would be able to see some pretty spectacular things. Not try to go Gila and then run up to Angel Fire and then shoot across to, you know, the western part of the state, but really just keep it regional.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a big state. Like, it's if you only have that amount of time, it's kind of hard to think about that logistically. It would take so long. You'd spend most of one of those whole days driving just to get from one place to the other. But I would say, you know, don't limit yourself to 3 days in New Mexico. Like, if that's all you got, then make 2 or 3 trips here over the course of your life. Like, because also up near Taos, you know, there's so many cool things to see up there. Beautiful, like, You've spent time around Angel Fire and the Enchanted Circle. All that stuff is amazing. Bandelier, like Los Alamos area, is really amazing and beautiful too. But like, if I had to pick like special spots, like I would say, because a lot of those places up north are beautiful and amazing, but you can kind of find mountains similar to them in Colorado maybe. But down, like, there's nowhere else on the planet that's like White Sands. So for that reason, I'd say, like, you know, it's, you kind of got to go see that.
It's pretty spectacular. I've seen some pictures. And then, like you said, the west part of the park has a little touch on, you know, the Guadalupe Mountains, and walking through that was actually, you know, really spectacular. So. Also, you guys have something that we in Texas do not have, and I want you to explain what this means to our listeners. You guys have BLM land.
Yeah, we do.
We do not.
Yeah. Well, the BLM stands for Bureau of Land Management, mm-hmm. which you guys have heard of it, I'm sure, right? Does every other state have it?
I've heard of it because you're my pal. So I'm guessing that that's pretty common, especially to people that hike and backpack a lot, especially in the quads, yeah. Because we're right next to New Mexico, and some of that BLM land we go stay at and then come right back across the border if we can't get a campsite.
Well,
just kind of talk about, like, what does that really mean for you guys hiking and backpacking?
Yeah.
Like, you don't need a reservation. You just,
go. It's one of the greatest. I love the fact that I know that Arizona and New Mexico have massive amounts of BLM land. And the cool thing about BLM land is, like, you can camp on it for free. Like, and there's all these, they call it like dispersed camping. and you, most of the time, I think it's, there's a 14 day limit. Like you can stay there on BLM land for 14 days, but I don't think anybody's going to know if you stay longer. There's people who I think just live on BLM land. I actually just drove through some today and you know, there's, I'm not an expert on BLM land or anything. I know you can shoot guns on BLM land, which is pretty cool if you're into that. I'm pretty sure there's hunting allowed on BLM land. Like you can car camp, but it's, do you know why it is that Texas doesn't have it? I'm curious about.
I have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I've heard someone try to explain it to me. Like you guys have, it's mostly private land in Texas. Like I think everything basically in Texas is private.
Yeah, ranches and stuff. And
that's not the case here. It's interesting too, because like West Texas is like New Mexico. Like there's a ton of just barren desert, hundreds of miles of barren desert.
And it's all owned by somebody.
Yeah. Why? Who wants to own that? I mean, I guess there's oil.
I do. I've been looking for land by Guadalupe Mountains forever. Just a little like 10 acres, but yeah, it's actually kind of expensive. Or they have it where it's part of a 100 or 200 acre plot and you're buying into this plot where you can use the whole plot, but you don't have your own land. So I didn't want to do that. But yeah, and to the listeners, BLM land, it is exactly what it is. It's just land. There's no bathroom. Usually there's no bathrooms. There's no lodge. There's no, I mean, a lot of times it's just man-made campsites. So, maybe you get a rock firing, but yeah, it is what it is. It's a free place and you're literally, you know, in the woods and, you pretty much have all the freedoms that you would want.
It's pretty great.
Yeah, absolutely. And it, you know, we make use of that. It's maybe about 30 minutes north of Guadalupe Mountains, some New Mexico BLM land all the time. Well, the times that we can't get campsites, we just drive up there. And if it's first come, first serve, and this BLM land has restrooms. So, you know, it's, and they're clean. And so it's pretty spectacular little place.
Yeah, actually, I was just driving around here next to the mountains in Las Cruces called the Oregon Mountains, the ones that kind of overlook the town. And there's a trail here and it's on BLM land. And they had, you know, they had a ranger there and a little lodge. And like, so it's not all the same. You know, yeah. There are places, and like you had to pay, pay like a $5 parking fee to park your car there. So some places on BLM land are more regulated than others.
Probably the stuff that's leading to some cool stuff.
Right. And stuff that I would say is closer to cities, you know, like this one's so close to Las Cruces that if they didn't manage it, they didn't have like rangers there, I'm sure it'd just probably get completely trashed and overrun there. But if you go out in the middle of nowhere, which there is BLM and pretty much in the middle of nowhere, you don't have to pay.
So can you think of any trails, any places that are lesser known, but you still get like the most bang for your buck, stunning views, stunning trails in New Mexico? So like for me, you know, I'm a fan of going to places where I don't see anybody. So instead of going to Palo Duro Canyon, I go to Caprock. I see the same type of stuff. I get some bison and I don't ever see hardly anybody. And, you know, they're just like an hour apart from each other. Or, you know, Big Bend is so popular, so famous. But I'm a fan of Guadalupe Mountains because where I'm at in Guadalupe Mountains, I literally don't see anybody the whole trip, and I'm out there for like a week at a time, except when I go to the ranger station or something, then you see people. But But, you know, when you go with me on these trips, we hardly ever see anybody. So, so that's what's nice for me. So can you think of any, you know, kind of not the black sheep of New Mexico, but any lesser known, but you think are just as spectacular as some of the popular places?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is where I grew up, which is Los Alamos, which is of Oppenheimer fame. That's where the Manhattan Project was. But it's far enough away and small enough of a city that it's not a destination, really. I mean, Bandelier National Monument, I don't know if you've heard of that, but that's there.
What's that place that I went to that I never can pronounce?
The Jemez, or the Valle Caldera.
That place is spectacular. And there were like two cars in the parking lot when we were there.
Yeah, it's a caldera. It's called the Valle Caldera. And a caldera is basically a volcano that collapsed in on itself. So it used to be, it still is a super volcano. Apparently it's like, if it ever goes off, it's going to, you know, destroy all of New Mexico or whatever. There's a super volcano. And it used to be, I think, I don't know if this is true, but people say it used to be taller than Everest, and then it exploded and collapsed in on itself. And so it's just a big, that's what you're seeing when you're there, a big valley of a collapsed volcano. And so one of the cool things about the Jemez is there's all kinds of hot springs everywhere because of the volcanic activity underground. So that's the first thing that comes to mind when you ask like kind of hidden gems is those mountains up there where I grew up. I don't think a lot of people have heard of them. They're absolutely gorgeous. There's hot springs. There's hundreds of miles of trails you could hike. A lot of BLM land you can just sleep on for free, rock climbing, fishing, you know, whatever you want, really. Hunting, there's elk up there. I love the Jemez Mountains. It's one of my favorite places. So,
Valle Caldera.
Caldera.
If you want to know what that place looks like, just watch Longmire. Episode 1, season 1, the opening part of that is he's making some coffee, he's standing on his porch, and his house in the series is in that, I guess, is it a national park or state park or national?
I can't remember what it's called now. It was all privately owned. The Spanish king gave it to a family. It was like a land grant. Yeah, there's a lot of land grant out there where, like, back when the conquistadors were just, because the Spanish, you know, like, obviously this used to be part of Spain, and then part of Mexico, and then, you know, now it's America. But so the Spanish king gave people just hundreds of miles of land. And then in my lifetime, I think early 2000s is when it became like a national preserve. I think it's called a preserve.
It's a preserve. That's what it is.
Which, who knows what that even means? I don't know what that means.
But to the listeners, you watch Longmire, first part of it, and that is the place we were just talking about. So, yeah. And I think when Longmire is driving to work, there's just hundreds of elk running across the road as he's, you know, heading into the city for his job. So check it out. So speaking of elk, actually, let me hold off on that question. So just real quickly, how would you compare hiking and backpacking in New Mexico between the north and south parts of the state?
I would say I've lived in the north for most of my time here. You know, well over a decade I lived up in the northern part of the state. So I'm just now starting to explore more down here, down south. And I'd say it's just hotter down here in the summer. So probably better down here. But the Gila National Forest and the wilderness out there is spectacular. And it feels almost like being up north. So I don't know. Both great
And I also hear a lot of people talk about Cloudcroft.
Yeah, which I still haven't been to, but I've heard it's amazing. I've seen pictures. It looks beautiful.
And is that more close to you than Gila?
Yeah, it's probably just like an hour away from me.
And to the listeners, if you are going to Google Gila, it's not spelt with a H. It's spelt with a G.
That's true.
So be careful. What is it? G-A-I-A or something like that?
No, it's G-I-L-A, Gila.
G-I-L-A,
it's spelled like Gila. I remember one of the first hikes we went on. It was the first time I met you. We were hiking with a bunch of Texans, and one of them called it the Gila, and I kind of laughed. I was like, it just seems like a Texan thing to just call it the Gila. But I like the way Gila sounds, too. Like, I'll call it the Gila sometime. Going to the Gila.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful there. And there's elk there too. Hot springs. It's amazing canyons and huge, huge cliffs everywhere. And there's a cliff dwelling, famous cliff dwellings there where the Native Americans built like an entire city in this cave, basically.
That's crazy. So speaking of and to the listeners, I met Sam at the Guadalupe Mountains. He was in the campsite just south of me, so next to me. And it was because we had the same Hyperlite backpack. That brought us together.
It's true. True story.
Yep. And if you want to hear the full story, I think your original podcast episode was what, episode two? No, three. I think number three. So check it out. All right, speaking of elk, I'm hiking in New Mexico. What kind of wildlife should I expect or prepare for?
Yeah, I mean, we got it all. I mean,
now, and it's also, does it matter what region of New Mexico I'm in? Like the mountain lions are only up north, or the bears are only in the south, or?
Right. It does depend somewhat. Like down here, we have these. People call them pigs, but they're technically not a pig. They're called javelinas. Have you heard of those?
Oh, I hate those stupid things. And they will come at you.
Yeah, they can be kind of aggressive. They'll charge you and stuff. Apparently, I've never been charged by one. I actually just saw them at work last week. I saw like three or four of them.
And their eyesight is really horrible.
Yeah. One of my coworkers called them little furry footballs because they kind of have like a football shape. They're little pigs, pig looking things, although they're not pigs, they're peccaries.
And I think they smell really bad too.
Yeah. They have a scent gland that's really gross, like right above their butt. And like, they're kind of gross animal. I think they're kind of cute, but, so we don't have those at all up north. Like up where I'm from in the Jemez and Los Alamos area, you'll never see one of those. Down south, I mean, I think at where I work now, we have a picture of the wall of all the rattlesnakes down here, and I think there's five maybe species of different rattlesnakes, and up north I think there's maybe one or two. So there's more. I would say there's more snakes and creepy crawly things in the desert.
Yeah, scorpions, tarantulas,
and bugs, centipedes. We actually just had a wildlife biologist come because we do field work out in the desert at my job, and we had a wildlife biologist come and kind of break down all the wildlife down here. It's really interesting. I liked it a lot, learning about that stuff. And then you know we got up. I would guess although. I'd say like there definitely are more bears up north, but that wildlife biologist, he was telling us there's bears even here in the Oregon Mountains and stuff. And there is one in the where I work, and the biologist said he actually watched the thing die, which is really sad. Like it died of old age. But so there's bears down here, and now recently in the Gila where I just was, we were just talking about There's Mexican wolves. There's gray wolves that they are running around in the Gila.
Were they introduced or they just migrated?
Yeah, I was trying to remember. I think they were brought back. Like, they were purposefully brought back to the Gila and introduced. But don't quote me on that. And because I believe there's Mexican gray wolves that just live in Mexico, right? They might have walked up here for all I know.
But no.
I don't know. This is everything. Big elk, bears, wolves, snakes.
What about mountain lion?
Yeah, there are mountain lions. I've never seen one. But they're here, for sure.
Mainly up north?
That's what I was about to say, is I don't know, actually. When that guy came to my work, he didn't say anything about mountain lions down here. But I would be surprised if there weren't mountain lions here, if there were not. Because, look, I lived in Tucson for a year, and there's a ton of mountain lions there. And that's not too different. I would guess there's probably some mountain lions. But I'd say, in general, what you should be probably most concerned about, well, first of all, I would say it wouldn't be the animals. It'd probably be, like, the heat and the weather. Like, I don't know very many people who have ever gotten hurt by an animal. And I don't think I've ever met someone who's been attacked by a wild animal. I don't know. Have you?
Yeah, I don't know that I know people that have had encounters where there was a possibility of an attack. John was in Washington, and he got somehow between a mama bear and a cub. And so she was charging him, bluff charging. And, he was scared. He had an ice axe, and he was like, come on. And the bear was just screaming like a baby. And, he's like, I'm trying to get away from you guys. Quit following me. But yeah, from attacked, no. And I think, like, if you just did a historical search on mountain lion attacks in Texas, since the 1800s, maybe there's been two. It doesn't happen. And John also ran into a mountain lion at Big Bend, and, you know, it just watched him. And there's been, I think it was two mountain lion kills. Like, it ate a sheep or killed a sheep or a aldad, whatever those species of kind of like bighorn sheep up there, right off the Guadalupe Peak Trail. And I think also there was a bunch of teenagers hiking to the peak trying to catch the sunrise, and they stumbled across a mountain lion that was sitting above them just watching them as they kind of walked by. But, you know, no attacks.
Yeah, I think in general, people are more concerned than they should be about wildlife, because it's like, I think it's evolutionary. Like, there's nothing scarier than a big monster trying to eat you, you know? Like,
no.
But realistically, that's very uncommon, and people are maybe unrealistically afraid of it. They kind of make it into I remember on the PCT with my brother, Pacific Crest Trail, people would often ask you, like, do you have a gun for bears? Like, I mean, you get asked it pretty regularly, and it's like, well, actually, I don't think any through hikers, I know people have been attacked on the PCT by bears, but I don't know if any through hikers, since they started really recording through hiking and it's really exploded, like, I don't know if anyone it's been attacked.
You have more people that have been attacked and killed by people on the AT, the PCT, the Continental Divide Trail, I would say by hundreds more than a bear kill or a bear attack.
Right.
Like, we should be worrying about the two-legged critters, not the four-legged.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. We're the most dangerous game.
Absolutely. So have you ever had any bear encounters?
And that wraps up another exciting episode of the Trailblazing Texas podcast.
We hope you enjoyed the episode today, and stay tuned for our next episode where we will pick back up where we left off and guarantee to uncover many more hiking gems and share many more tips to enhance your experience on the trail. Until then, happy trails and happy hiking.